taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read, we study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I am glad you could join me today. Today I want to kick off with a quote from Alexander Hamilton from Federalist Papers number 78, where he says, "Whoever attentively considers the different departments of power must perceive that in a government in which they are separated from each other, the judiciary, from the nature of its function, will always be the least dangerous to the political rights of the Constitution, because it will be least in capacity to annoy or injure them. The executive not only dispenses the honors, but holds the sword of the community. The legislature not only commands the purse, but prescribes the rules by which the duties and rights of every citizen are to be regulated. The judiciary, on the contrary, has no influence over either the sword or the purse, no direction either of the strength or of the wealth of the society, and can take no active resolution whatever. It may truly be said to have neither force nor will, but merely judgment, and must ultimately depend upon the aid of the executive arm even for the efficacy of its judgments." In Federalist Papers number 78, Hamilton is discussing the judiciary. And he points out here that, well, the judiciary, according to the Constitution, is the least able to annoy or injure the rights protected by the Constitution. Why? Because the courts have neither force nor will, only judgment. Now, compare that to the way the courts are treated today. You see, if we, again, looking at the frame that Hamilton is talking about, the executive, the president, he has the sword. He's the commander-in-chief. He bestows the honors. He nominates and he appoints. Congress, well, they create the laws. They not only regulate the purse, but they set the rules and regulations by which we live our lives. But the courts are supposed to have no direction over either the strength or the wealth of society. In fact, they can't even enforce their own opinions. They have neither force nor will, only judgment. They're dependent on others to execute their judgment. Now, is that the way we live today? Certainly doesn't appear that way. How many of you have heard of a federal court ruling one way or another? Hopefully you realize, if you've listened to this program for a while, courts don't rule. They opine. But you see, just as with we talk about the president having no clothes when it comes to the executive orders that he issues, the courts have no clothes because they don't rule. Simply because a court offers an opinion does not make it law. In fact, it's a violation of the Constitution for them to consider it law. But yet, here we are, living our lives, ruled by oligarchs in black robes. Any law that gets passed, state, federal, local, is not truly effective until a court has blessed it. Any act of government, any act of an individual, can be overturned merely on the opinion of a judge. And because of a combination of the court's slavish devotion to precedent and the general ignorance of the American people, including most of our elected officials, they get away with it. See, America is a republic. At least that's what was designed, where the people choose representatives by election to execute their power in their name. Yet over the last many decades, America has become an oligarchy, where that self-government is overseen by oligarchs in black robes. And the highest panel, the highest oligarchs, are the high priests in black robes that we call the Supreme Court. Men and women who apparently need a remedial English program because they can't understand the plain language of the Constitution. So I want to take some time today and look at and expose the oligarchy that currently is regulating America, and then answer the question, what can be done? So let's start with these high priests in black robes. There was a request for certiorari, or to be heard by the court, by healthcare workers in Maine. See, Maine instituted a statewide COVID-19 vaccine mandate that covered the entire state. And several of these healthcare workers have sued, and it got to the Supreme Court. Well, it got to the front step. You see, the justices declined to even hear the case for or against the appeals court decision that left the mandate in place. Now, I've talked before about vaccine mandates. They violate state constitutions. They violate federal constitutions. But what we see here is a system where it's not the Constitution that rules. It's the courts. See, the Constitution says, of the United States says, you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, Article 1, Section 6 of the Maine Constitution goes on to say that a person shall not be deprived of life, liberty, or property or privileges, but by judgment of that person's peers or the law of the land. Well, that's very interesting, because the vaccine mandate wasn't issued by the legislature. It wasn't the law of the land. It was issued by the governor as an emergency rule. So here we have a violation of the plain language of both the U.S. Constitution and the Constitution of the state of Maine. But that doesn't mean anything, because federal judges place their opinions above the actual laws of the land. A federal circuit court upheld, allowed to stand, refused to enjoin this executive order by the governor, violating the rights of every healthcare worker in Maine by depriving them of both the liberty to go about their lives without external interference, the property they have in their body, and the privileges, again, to work without government interference, not by a judgment of that person's peers, and not by the law of the land, but simply by the edict of a governor. By all rights, the people of Maine should be up in arms. They should simply say, no, we did not authorize this. You are depriving us, you are depriving our fellow citizens of liberty and property without due process. You are violating the Constitution of our own state. This will not stand. But what did they do? They went begging to the federal government, going, please protect us from our state. This is a big problem. This idea that the only place to go to protect you from your state employees that work for you are the federal employees that are also supposed to work for you. But they're not protecting the healthcare workers of Maine, are they? Because they're not applying, in this case, the federal constitution, Amendment 5, you shall not be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, a process designed to protect the rights of the individual. There was no process to protect the rights of the individual. According to Maine's own website, the governor issued an emergency rule requiring vaccinations. Why? The vaccines don't. Now, again, the order came on August of 2021. We know the vaccines don't prevent the infection. We know they don't prevent the spread. So we're basically, the governor of Maine said, you will take this to keep yourself from having two bad symptoms because I say so. And our oligarchs ignore the law, ignore the will of the people, ignore the process that they swore to uphold, and allowed a state to and continue to allow a state to infringe on the rights of its citizens without even a proper opinion from the court. Now, would the court's opinion have forced the governor to rescind that order? No. But it would be further justification for the citizens of the state of Maine to not only refuse the vaccination, but to demand compensation, a redress of their grievance. But we're not ruled by laws. We're ruled by the opinions of judges. And it's not just healthcare workers, and it's not just Maine. The Supreme Court recently heard a challenge by 19 different states to powers the EPA has claimed under the Clean Air Act. So we have 19 states begging the federal government to protect themselves from the federal government. Well, the Supreme Court's part of the federal government. It was created by the Constitution of the United States. The EPA is a creation of Congress, which is a creation of the Constitution of the United States. It's part of the federal government. Now, the EPA is run out of the executive branch. Again, part of the federal government. You're going against, these states are begging the federal government to protect them from the federal government. And surprise, surprise, it's a coin toss. We don't know how this court's going to react. And why are we dependent on the opinion of a court for the application of the supreme law of the land? I'm working on an article involving nullification. It should probably be out next Monday. I'll talk about it here on the radio program. But it's important to understand that the states are not designed to be vassals of Washington, D.C. They have every legal authority to tell Washington, D.C. the EPA is unconstitutional. There is no power delegated to the United States to regulate, to protect the environment. There isn't. Therefore, it's a violation of the 10th Amendment, is unconstitutional, it is null, it is void. But you see, we don't live under the Constitution, or not directly. We live under the interpretation of judges. Now, I've asked lawyers for years, when you were in law school, did you study the language of the Constitution, the actual Constitution, or did you study constitutional law? So far, I've had one lawyer say they studied the Constitution. Everyone else studied constitutional law. You know what constitutional law is? It's the opinion of judges about the Constitution. Technically, it's the opinion of a judge about the opinion of a judge about the opinion of a judge about the opinion of a judge of what they think the Constitution means, or in some cases should mean. What does it say when the supreme law of the land is no longer supreme? It is held hostage to the opinions of fallible men and women. Men and women, many of which have an agenda, many of which have not even been educated in what the Constitution actually says. That's why I say we live like an oligarchy. Because not only do we have men and women in black robes that assume the authority to regulate the document that created them, to assume a power not delegated to them by the Constitution, and we let them get away with it. But now we have the states begging the federal government to protect them from the federal government when it violates the Constitution, when they violate their oath of office, when they violate the supreme law of the land. They go begging. And what happens if the court doesn't follow the Constitution? They're at the Supreme Court. Now, where do they go if the Supreme Court fails to abide by the Constitution? It's happened frequently over the last several decades of my life. Where do you go? Oh, well, we need to get Congress to pass a law. Let's talk a bit more about that later. Because if the courts get to reinterpret the Constitution, I've also seen the courts reinterpret the laws of Congress, ignore the actual language, but reinterpret it into what they think it should be, or what they think Congress might have meant. Just listen to some of the oral arguments and the justices, how frequently they'll go, well, we think that the Congress meant this. They said that, but they meant this. Or, well, what is more just, this or that? Not what follows the law, but what is, in their opinion, more just. In an attempt in their minds to establish justice, they violate the very tenets of justice. The idea that a government of the people, by the people, and for the people makes up the law. And their job is to apply that law. Their job is to look at a controversy, apply the actual laws of the land, and come up with a decision. But no, they've decided that their job is to not simply apply the law, not simply use the law in their deliberations, but to make law. How often have we heard an opinion of a court referred to as a law of the land? It is no such thing. But we've all been brainwashed. We've all been conditioned into believing that the judge, whatever the judge says, is holy writ. It is law. It must be followed. Failure to do so is insurrection. It's lawlessness. But that's not the country that our framers gave us. That's not the republic Franklin said we would get if we could keep it. We're losing the republic because inch by inch and yard by yard, we the people are allowing those who act in government to go beyond their enumerated powers and never punishing them for it. For example, here we have a federal judge, quote unquote, blocking an executive order from President Biden. Now, I don't care if this is not a question of whether or not the order is constitutional or not. It's not. But here we have a district judge, James Kane, who, quote unquote, blocked the president's executive order. This has to do with factoring in the social cost of emissions when dealing with climate change issues. According to the opinion, the injunction that was placed, the court agrees that the public interest and balance of equities weigh heavily in favor of granting a preliminary injunction. So the judge has basically said, listen, we think this should not go into place. And I agree with the judge. I agree that the way the judge got there, but that President Biden was executing a power not delegated to him under the Constitution. He can't simply rewrite the law. He can't simply make up reasons for this. But you see, that's not what the court said. He says public interest and balance of equities weigh heavily in favor of granting the injunction. Why? Well, he says the Biden's order would harm the plaintiff state's ability to purchase affordable energy. Carry out, fine. I agree. My issue is not with the injunction, because what the court has said is, listen, we're telling you not to enforce this law, not to enforce this executive order. But this is basically the judge telling the executive branch, listen, don't do this. There's nothing that says the executive branch can't ignore the judge and continue on. What's the judge going to do? What's the judiciary going to do? See, the only people that are able to enforce this injunction work for the President of the United States. And before you take that big swallow and go, oh my God, that would be lawlessness. Remember, all of our states allow we the people to determine who those states are going to vote for to sit in that office. The man in 1600 Pennsylvania is there because of we the people. We informed our states. Now, sure, there were some illegal actions and there were some shenanigans. I'm not talking about that. But we hired an executive. That executive is breaking the law. And we're sitting back and expecting a court to go, you tell him no. That is a complete misunderstanding of the constitutional structure of government. So what we have is we have a judge that issued this injunction, and it's, again, it's an opinion. He has neither force nor will. He has no way of making that injunction functional, because the only people that would, the U.S. Marshals, work for the President of the United States, not for the Judiciary Department. But here's the part of this that truly infuriates me every time I hear it. This judge has not blocked anything. This judge has issued an opinion. He hasn't ruled. He has no. He simply said, "Listen, in my opinion, this needs to be put on hold until the entire court can hear it. Therefore, I'm going to issue an injunction, which basically tells the president to ignore what the president said and do what the court said." The fact that I'm okay with the injunction isn't the issue. Think of what the shaping of the American mind is with this type of language. We have, in this case, a media outlet, the Epoch Times, telling the people that a judge, legally, a federal judge, can order the president around. It's not what the Constitution says. The Constitution says, listen, he can issue an opinion, but remember, it's still up to the executive to execute those powers. Or how did Hamilton put it? They must ultimately depend upon the aid of the executive arm, even for the efficacy of their judgments. This judge is dependent on the courts. On the executive, on President Biden, for the efficacy of his injunction. But Paul, what happens if the president can do whatever he wants without a court to interfere? That's what they have impeachment for. You see, if our representatives in Congress were actually doing their jobs, if they were more interested in representing the people than playing party politics, this would have generated articles of impeachment. He has violated his oath of office. He's usurped a power of Congress, but Congress just rolls over and says, nope, we're not going to say anything because of party, my opinion, mostly based on party politics. On both sides, by the way. This isn't a Democrats are bad and Republicans are good, because the Republicans are not doing anything about this because they think it would look bad and might impact their chance at re-election. So the oligarchs rule because the people refuse to hire representatives that will do their job, that will hold their election officials accountable, their elected officials accountable, their elected representatives. This is how you end up with courts that rule. Not because the law says so, not because they're legally authorized, but because the people let them. Again, the judge here, I don't think, did anything wrong. He issued an injunction. It's the attitude, the idea implanted in the American psyche that judges can block the actions of other branches of government. They can opine. They can do nothing more. This judge cannot stop the EPA from doing what it's doing. He has no way of enforcing that order. He is dependent upon the president he just said no to. And while you may think, yeah, but if the president won't do it because the court said so, and that's a good thing, is it really? Because the very same judge that can block an act of the president because he doesn't like it can block an action of a president that you think should be blocked, can block one that you think should not be blocked. See, this becomes lawlessness. We become ruled by men, not by law. Because remember, we had judges that said, listen, what President what one president did was absolutely legal, but we don't like the way he did it. Therefore, we're going to block it. That isn't the rule of law. That isn't a representative republic. That isn't oligarchy. It's just another form of tyranny. And these tyrants don't stand for elections at the federal level. But the people who do, our representatives, are supposed to hold them accountable. We'll talk a bit more about that in the second half of the program. But first, I have to take a break. Before I do, please head to constitutionstudy.com. Find out more of the work that we're doing. Help support the work that we're doing. You can support the Constitution Study. You can buy some of the books. You can donate to the cause. I'm not a 501c3, but it would certainly be appreciated to have people support the work that we're doing here so I can continue to put together these radio programs, the articles, the videos, the speaking engagements to help educate the American people, to help them read and study the Constitution and teach the rising generation to be free. You can also go, you can ask a question, you can ask that I come speak at one of your events. Everything is there. Just please head to constitutionstudy.com and find out more. Now, the other place I'd like you to go is healthycell.com. You know, the vitamins that we take, that most of us take, haven't been upgraded since the 1930s until HealthyCell came along with a highly absorbable, pill-free vitamin solution. Now, I don't know about you, but frequently I get to the end of the day and I'm trying to get stuff done and I'm just having a hard time focused. I can become easily distracted. And I know a lot of people will reach for that extra cup of coffee or the energy drink or the energy shot. But the problem is frequently you're dealing with a lot of caffeine and maybe sugar and you get a nice high and then you crash. Well, HealthyCell has a product called Focus and Recall. It helps boost your short-term focus, boost your long-term brain power without the highs and the lows of caffeinated drinks or energy shots. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 20% off your first order. All you have to do is go to healthycell.com/outloud. You can try any of their products, but go to healthycell.com/outloud. They will give you 20% off your first order. Pick anything you want at checkout. The code OUTLOUD should already been applied, and they'll give you 20% off. So give it a try, whether it's Focus or Recall or any of their products. But just make sure you use the code, you use the URL, healthycell.com/outloud, so you get 20% off your first order.
It's time to rethink COVID disinfection. A study by Harvard, Drexel, and Virginia Tech concluded, we don't have a single documented case of COVID transmission through surfaces. The reality is that COVID spreads mainly through the air. Shared air is the problem, not shared surfaces. The solution is the Genesis Fogger, which uses natural HOCL to disinfect both air and surfaces simultaneously. It's perfect for home or business. NIH says HOCL may well be the disinfectant of choice for coronaviruses. There's nothing more natural or more effective. Genesis fogs at the precise particle size to combat COVID and other harmful pathogens. It's what's missing from your disinfecting protocol. Visit genesisfogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at genesisfogger.com/outloud.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with HealthyCell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com. HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. We are the voice of a nation, the American nation, that is. This is Malcolm Out Loud. I invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com, where the fight for liberty and justice continues. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're talking about the oligarchy that is the federal judiciary. It's not designed that way. It's not legal, but it works because, well, we the people let it work. We the people submit to the overreaching actions of the judiciary. We allow our elected employees that are supposed to keep them in check to be derelict in their duty to oversee what they're doing. See, most people seem to forget that federal judges do not serve lifetime appointments. Oh, I know. We've been told this time immemorial. Every time there's a big appointment, especially the Supreme Court, we hear lifetime appointments. You know, we're told choosing a president is important. And it is, because they get to appoint judges. But we're told they have lifetime appointments. There's just one problem. It's not what the Constitution says. See, Article 3, Section 1 says, the judges both of the Supreme and Inferior Courts shall hold their office during good behavior. Now, the logical question is, well, what's good behavior? In the beginning of the Republic, good behavior was defined by your representatives, right? Because it's members of the House that have the sole power of impeachment. And impeachment is a charge of bad behavior, but they don't. They don't nowadays because, well, they're more worried about politics and the position of the party and getting reelected than actually doing their jobs. So we looked at not only the actions, the first half of the program, we looked at kind of how we talk about what judges do. Recognizing, as Alexander Hamilton said, that have neither force nor will, only judgment, we've looked at how we enforce their will, not by compunction, but by lack of understanding. We simply submit to the opinion of a judge, whether it's legal or not, whether it's constitutional or not. We even place judges above Congress, above the executive, even though, as Alexander Hamilton said, they don't control the purse, they don't set the laws, they don't carry the sword or deliver honors. We have allowed them to elevate themselves from the weakest branch of government to the most powerful branch of government. And it's all our fault. Either directly or indirectly, they are our fault. If for no other reason than because either we chose the person who appointed them, or the people who work for us that we chose refused to hold them accountable. Which leads to some very twisted situations. See, last year, legislatures in Florida, Georgia, and Texas all passed significant laws to help ensure the integrity of their elections. Now, the thing to understand is there's only one federal election in the Constitution. That's when the presidential electors vote for president. Your votes for House Rep, for state, Senate, U.S. Senate, even presidential electors are all state elections. So Florida, Georgia, and Texas, they passed laws in an attempt to improve their election integrity. For example, Florida put an identification requirement for those requesting an absentee ballot. You have to prove you are who you say you are. It was less than 10 minutes after that bill was signed before that was challenged in court. Georgia passed a law that puts additional stricter requirements on the voter IDs and things like limitations on drop boxes, other things involving absentee ballots, and even the banning handing out of food and water to voters in line, except by the actual poll workers. That got challenged very quickly as well. In Texas? Well, the Texas bans drive-through voting, prohibits 24-hour voting, the distribution of ballot applications, puts, again, tighter ID requirements on ballots, and allows poll watchers free movement within the polling station. Of course, they do have to have training and set up some rules, but they are allowed to observe what's going on. All three of these states have had their laws challenged. Now, what does that have to do with the judiciary? Because each one of those states' laws have been challenged in court, and these multiple lawsuits claim, well, there are those that claim these multiple lawsuits could ban them from being enforced during the 2022 midterms. Now, understand, if we actually lived under the Constitution, if we applied the Constitution, the federal court, the only thing the federal court would have to do with this is to see in the elections for U.S. Rep and U.S. Senate, do the laws comply with any regulations that have been overruled by Congress? You see, Article 1, Section 4 gives Congress the ability to make or alter regulations involving the election, but only of members of the U.S. House and members of the U.S. Senate. They can't change the time or except the place of choosing the senators, but they can set some regulations. So the only thing the federal court should be involved in here is do these laws follow any regulations that have been adopted by Congress? Sadly, I doubt that will be the limit. I seriously doubt that. I hope for. But here what you have is you have states regulating their own elections, and you've got federal courts that will, in their own interpretation, decide whether or not these are fair. Not whether or not they're legal. Not whether or not they conform with the laws of the state in the United States, whether or not they conform with the Constitution of the state of the United States. Nope. They will determine whether or not, in the judge's opinion, they're fair. In other words, all the work of your representatives, if you live in one of these three states, now you may agree with what that court, with the state legislature has done or not, but your representatives have passed these laws. And now the court gets to determine, claiming the power to determine whether or not they can actually execute those laws. Now again, here's some very interesting constitutional facts for you. Again, unless it is a law, a regulation created or modified by Congress, the federal courts have no say. They'd have to show it's a violation of the Constitution or laws of the United States, and we'll see. Also, by the way, those laws created by Congress, they can only impact elections for House and Senate, U.S. House and Senate. So in other words, no opinion of a court can impact of a federal court can impact election for state offices or even presidential electors. Although 2022 is a midterm, therefore there is no presidential electors on the ballot. But we're still back to the courts have no way of enforcing their opinion. Now, again, I don't want to prejudge what these judges are going to do. But the point I want to make is, if the representatives of the American people are not allowed to establish the rules for elections, if it's done by oligarchs in black robes, are we still a republic? Are we still the land of the free and the home of the brave if the rules have to be validated or verified or approved by these men and women in black robes? You see, because that's a very There's a little bit of history behind that you may find rather interesting. See, you remember the Declaration of Independence? If you remember, if you actually read it, there are actually 27 specific grievances that are listed in the Declaration of Independence, specifically in this case against King George. The very first of those grievances was that he has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. Now let's remove King George and instead put in a federal judge. Here you have laws. All three states passed laws that involved making sure there was a valid photo ID in order to access a ballot. In other words, that you are who you say you are, that you have qualified to vote, that you've registered to vote. We're just making sure that, you know, it's actually you voting. But the laws are waiting for the assent of a judge, a federal judge. The very first grievance we had against King George, we can now allege against the federal judiciary. We have these laws that we are waiting for their assent before we know we'll be able to follow them. Now again, whether you agree with the laws or not, the question is, do we the people through our representatives have the power to create laws? And will those laws be upheld as long as they're within the supreme law? And that's the crux of the matter. See, if the federal judiciary followed the Constitution as written as the supreme law of the land, I'd have less of an issue with this. But you see, they don't. They follow precedent. They follow what their predecessors, they follow their own impressions and interpretations. They violate their oath of office. They behave badly, but they're never held to account. So when I see this article that the Supreme Court is going to hear a case of a Colorado artist because she won't make websites that celebrate same-sex marriages, I'm not convinced the Constitution will be upheld. Because the state of Colorado is trying to deprive this artist of the liberty to work on projects she wants to engage with customers she wants to, on the property she has in her skills and how they are applied and how they are deployed. The state of Colorado wants to violate that. But based on recent precedent, so do the courts. So this woman's life, her rights, her ability to work, her property, her liberty are not being protected. They are rest in the hands of 9 high priests in black robes, which will opine from on high as to whether or not she actually has the right to be at liberty, or whether she can be enslaved to work for other people. Yes, I said enslaved, forced to work against her will on things she does not want. Will her rights be protected? If we followed the Constitution, it'd be fairly cut and dry. You cannot deprive her of her liberty to engage with the customer she wants on the project she wants without due process of law. You cannot deprive her of the property she has, both in her skills and in the product she creates, without due process of law. You cannot subject her freedoms for the preferences of another. Now, how we got here is a whole other question, and I've talked about it before, and maybe I'll do it again. But what we're looking at here is her future is not secure by law, but we are waiting for the approval of judges. And in that situation, one judge may protect her rights, One judge may overrule her rights. You just don't know. And how can you live? How can you plan for the future if you don't know how the law will be applied? If you don't know what the law is because judges can change their mind. Now, in most of these cases I've talked about, we don't know for sure yet what's going to happen. We're waiting for the opinions of the judges. But there are several examples of truly bad behavior by federal judges. And the one thing I haven't heard in any of these cases are articles of impeachment. For example, U.S. District Judge Jed Rakoff announced that after sending the case to the jury, he didn't care. He would intervene. If the jury didn't come up with the answer he agreed with, he would throw their opinion out and throw the case out. He would intervene. He would meddle in a jury opinion. I'd like to remind this federal judge who supposed to have read the Constitution, supposed to be aware of what the Constitution, he took an oath to support the Constitution of the United States. I would like to remind this judge of the Sixth Amendment. The Seventh Amendment. That said, no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of common law. What has this judge done? First of all, this judge has committed jury tampering. Well, the jurors found out. The jurors were alerted to the fact that the judge overseeing the case had already prejudiced, this is how I'm going to appeal. So even if you side with Palin, with former Governor Sarah Palin, doesn't matter, he's going to flip it. That's jury tampering. That's bad behavior. He's already announced that he's going to re-examine a fact tried by a jury in a manner other than by common law. That's judicial misconduct. Where are the articles of impeachment for this federal judge? That is bad behavior. That is the very definition of bad behavior. But your representatives in Congress are not calling for his impeachment. And oh, by the way, it doesn't need to be the representatives from New York. This is a federal judge. Any member of the House of Representatives can file articles of impeachment. Where are they? Your employees are not doing their job. Even worse, we are seeing activist judges that are revoking child custody from the parents because they refuse to perform surgery on their minor child. Oh, that surgery is not medically necessary. Parents are having their rights terminated by a judge because they refuse to participate to allow their child to go through medical gender transition, to take life-altering hormones, possibly mutilation surgery. And for that of a minor child, for that, parents have been denied their rights by a judge. Not because of a law, because the judge thinks that the child knows better than the parent. I've seen a court case in Arizona because two parents did not agree that their 15-year-old daughter was a boy. Judges in California stripped a father of his parental rights after he tried to delay the child's medical transition when the 15-year-old claimed to be transgender. And one parent agreed and one parent didn't. This is not law. This is lawlessness. These are judges being indoctrinated. In many cases, they are taking activist training to treat gender dysphoria as a physical condition, not a mental condition. See, if you're a boy and you think you're a girl, the problem's between your ears. and vice versa. Now, when these children come of age and can make decisions for themselves, if they wish to go through that treatment, that is fine. We are talking about minor children. In many cases, these minor children have been indoctrinated with the idea that if they don't fit the stereotypes that these activists believe, then they must be transgender. Forget the medical science, the history that shows that many children go through a questioning period in puberty, only to come out of it later and decide, no, that was just a phase. Forget the fact that Johns Hopkins University, the hospital that gave us a gender transition surgery, stopped performing it because they found no betterment in the life outcomes of the people who've had the surgery and the people who didn't. We have judges substituting their opinion for the law. Tell me that's not an oligarchy. Or what about the January 6th defendants, many of which are pushing for a change of venues because they're claiming that the judge is biased, that there is judge and jury bias within the system. Even worse, we are seeing activist judges that are revoking child custody from the parents because they refuse to perform surgery on their minor child. Oh, that surgery is not medically necessary. Parents are having their rights terminated by a judge because they refuse to participate to allow their child to go through medical gender transition, to take life-altering hormones, possibly mutilation surgery. And for that of a minor child, for that, parents have been denied their rights by a judge. Not because of a law, because the judge thinks that the child knows better than the parent. I've seen a court case in Arizona because two parents did not agree that their 15-year-old daughter was a boy. Judges in California stripped a father of his parental rights after he tried to delay the child's medical transition when the 15-year-old claimed to be transgender. And one parent agreed and one parent didn't. This is not law. This is lawlessness. These are judges being indoctrinated. In many cases, they are taking activist training to treat transgender gender dysphoria as a physical condition, not a mental condition. See, if you're a boy and you think you're a girl, the problem's between your ears, and vice versa. Now, when these children come of age and can make decisions for themselves, if they wish to go through that treatment, that is fine. We are talking about minor children. In many cases, these minor children have been indoctrinated with the idea that if they don't fit the stereotypes that these activists believe, then they must be transgender. Forget the medical science, the history that shows that many children go through a questioning period in puberty, only to come out of it later and decide, no, that was just a phase. Forget the fact that Johns Hopkins University, the hospital that gave us a gender transition surgery, stopped performing it because they found no betterment in the life outcomes of the people who've had the surgery and the people who didn't. We have judges substituting their opinion for the law. Tell me that's not an oligarchy. Or what about the January 6th defendants, many of which are pushing for a change of venues because they're claiming that the judge is biased, that there is judge and jury bias within the system. One of the attorneys that was moving for a change of venue said the prosecutor gave misleading, inaccurate, and false information, stating that the vice president-elect Kamala Harris was at the Capitol. Well, she wasn't actually vice president-elect until the actual votes, but she was supposedly not in the Capitol, supposedly to make this a more heinous offense, but it was true. It was not true. This would, again, they said this would predispose any jury pool against the client because of the false media coverage promoted by the prosecutor. District judge shot that down, says, nope, that isn't, you don't have an issue there. Or you look at the situations where the people who have already been either pled guilty or tried, and you have the judges coming out and condemning them while watching them on trial. They've basically prejudged all the other defendants, but nope, you're not, you're going to get a fair trial here. On top of all the other illegal, unconstitutional acts, is anyone really surprised? But there's one other piece of this puzzle I want people to recognize. I'm running out of time, so let me do this quick. See, I saw this interesting article about the American Bar Association requiring law schools to educate students on bias and cross-cultural competency and racism. Why is a private organization, the American Bar Association, setting standards for law schools? Why are lawyer standards being set by a private organization completely outside of the influence of the voting public? Because it's an oligarchy, and they've set up their own temple. So now the American people don't set the standards for judges. We don't set the standards for lawyers anymore. This private organization, the American Bar Association, is doing that. In order to practice law in a state, you need the a license and the approval of that state's private bar association. Tell me the judiciary has not become an oligarchy. That is the state of what is euphemistically called the American justice system. That's why I don't say we have a justice system. What we have is just a system. And it will remain that way until the American people hire representatives that hold these judges accountable for their bad behavior. You can find out more about my show and get all the latest podcasts. Just go to AmericaOutloud.com. Look under shows or schedule. You'll find the Constitution Study. You can be in the know and help share the blessings of liberty.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day.